I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And summer returns in fall. Hey, before we go any farther in the show, Dan, you were not here on Friday, and for a reason that I didn't know if you were wanting to talk about or not.
Yeah, I was unexpected day off on Friday.
What happened?
Well, I was getting ready to come to the building on Friday and come to the station, and I walked out to my car, and I noticed a bunch of windows had been busted out.
By ne'er-do-wells.
By ne'er-do-wells. And it appears that they used some type of firearm of some type. It may have been a BB or a pellet gun. A bunch of little holes in the windows and marks along the body of the car.
I'm sorry, man.
And the windows were punched out. And so I had to deal with all of that.
Were others targeted, Daniel?
No, I looked around. It did not appear that any other cars had been hit. You know, I live down in the West Bottoms, and where I park, it's very rustic and rugged, and yeah, it's not exactly a regular parking area.
And this isn't the first time that your car has been
A couple of years ago, somebody, a thief, came along and popped a couple of windows and stole a bunch of stuff that was in my car. And, yeah, that was an ordeal. A couple of years later, now this is happening. Now there's nothing to steal because I don't leave anything
in your car
at all. Although they did not steal my baseball bat that I keep in the car. And
do you keep that in your car for protective reasons?
From ne'er-do-wells?
Well, in case I ever, you know, come across people that want to play a game of baseball.
Sure. Always prepared.
You know, always prepared.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. And then you've got to go, you know, deal with that and get the insurance claim and the glass. I mean, it's just a pain.
It's a pain. It's a hassle. And I know a number of people have had to go through this kind of stuff.
What did your agent say? Again?
Yeah. Again?
Well, I'm so sorry, man.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. It's rather annoying, but, you know.
Nobody hurt. Property can be replaced.
Truth.
Exactly.
Truth.
It's just, you know, ne'er-do-wells.
When do they do well?
Ne'er.
Mm-hmm. I do have to shout out to the town of Weston, Missouri. I'm sorry, Dan. While you were dealing with the anxiety over your busted windows, I might have had one of the greatest, most relaxing weekends of my life.
Weston is fantastic.
My
it's a great little town.
Goodness, how lucky are we that it is so close.
I've never been.
Okay. It had been many years since I had been. And I think the last time I was there, it was to cover something of note when I worked for Channel 5. I had never just gone to spend the weekend. You know, the colors probably aren't what they would be had we had more rain, you know that, but it is still stunning. The history of the bourbon distilleries there. We did a holiday, H-O-L-O-D-A-Y, bourbon distillery tour. Run, do not walk. I'm not a bourbon drinker. I'm new to bourbon. I like it on my nose, not in my mouth. Like, I can start over the last few months to start to smell the notes. I'm just not a bourbon drinker. I don't
when
know
you
that
pay
I,
attention, you start
yes.
to learn
what do you
things,
mean on yeah. my nose?
Well, there are notes, and it will say this, just like with wine, that when and there's a certain way that you put it up to your nose, it will say what you are supposed to smell. And then the taste is in the same wheelhouse, but can be different. It's very refined.
It's kind of like wine.
Yeah. And let me just tell you, Scott, the tour of that distillery, Lewis and Clark went through there, discovered one of the springs. And then, you know, as the years go on, entrepreneurs are like, we know those limestone springs are the best springs for the water to have to make things like bourbon. It is one of the most fascinating tours I've ever been on. And again, I don't drink bourbon.
It's a hidden gem, especially even for folks here in the metro that don't know what is Weston. Well, it's a great little town right on the upper
The shopping, the shopping,
the metro.
Just little mom and pop shops and restaurants. There is not anything commercial within miles.
I go through it every year numerous times because it, right up the road from that is so, Snow Creek.
So it doesn't have like a McDonald's
or
a Casey's?
No. It is the tiniest mom and pop, like what would you say, Dan, six blocks?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the inn where we stayed is 150 years old. I mean, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
And you will go and be like, how am I not doing this at least twice a year?
It's just north of Fort Leavenworth on the other side of the river.
On the other side of the river. Yeah, it's just around the corner from that. And, of course, you have O'Malley's with the underground tunnels and everything.
And, Scott, obviously are not drinkers, but I don't drink bourbon. Do the Holiday Distillery Tour because it is a tour of how it's made.
It's probably not the best place for me to be.
It's not a bar. It's outside in this stunning area of nature. They have this, they call them Rick houses, where they store the bourbon.
Rick houses.
Seven stories, and you will marvel at how that structure does not collapse under the weight of itself. Every barrel of bourbon starts out at like 500 pounds, and there are seven stories, and they sit there for years. Until they uncork it, and I also learned, Dan, I can say this on the air because this is what it's called. You see the barrels, the hole in the center of that barrel, and they have to be stored with the hole up, right, for all of the obvious reasons.
Otherwise,
it would leak out, is called a bunghole.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
all right.
Scott,
that is the term I can confirm.
Fascinating way that they get the barrels, and the bunghole always has to be facing up because you don't want it leaking. It is the most fascinating way that they get the barrels that are 500 pounds rolled all the way through into this house on something that looks like train tracks, and it's not. And you also know barrels are not held together by anything. The wood is held together just by the seal and the...
Sam,
to hold 500 gallon, like 500 pounds of liquid.
Right.
The fact that...
it's the pressure.
And that's what makes the bourbon the color it is, Scott.
Right.
It's a fascinating thing.
They have to roll it a very certain way to make sure that bunghole is facing up. It is so fascinating.
If the bunghole is down, you've got problems.
Yes, that is correct, Sam.
Not only is that the first time... that term has been used on the radio in Kansas City. It's the first time it's been used 12 times.
It's probably the first time it's been used where we're not going to get fined by the FCC because
Scott,
that's the actual term.
The things
term.
We learn
Run,
on the radio.
Do not walk. I absolutely loved it. One of the cisterns is 50 feet deep next to the spot where Lewis and Clark went through. You would love it, I'm telling you.
Okay.
And the thing is...
I bought a scarf. Oh, the shopping is incredible.
Okay. So many people thought it was something else.
Stop it.
Are
we talking about Weston or the hole on the
whiskey
barrel?
And why is Weston east of Easton and Easton is west of Weston?
Why is Greenland ice and Iceland green?
They had a car show there this weekend. They had a whiskey festival. We didn't even make it there. And if you're a wine lover, they do have so many wineries.
Okay.
I'll show you my pictures. It was gorgeous.
Okay. Are we done?
I think we can fit the word in a few more times.
No.
No?
Did you get picture? Never mind.
Yes, and I'm telling you, I don't make up
to ask that question.
This is what we did over the weekend. It was spectacular.
We're going to have to check it out.
And town shuts down like around 9 o'clock, by the way, Scott. It's right up your alley. There is no bustling nightlife. Like, you do the deal during the day, and then by 9 o'clock, you're like, oh my God, I want to go to bed.
Well, it's because they started drinking bourbon at 11 a.m.
If you choose, you can do that.
All right, what's coming up next?
More lessons in how casks
we
are
will
made.
go from Weston, Missouri, in that fabulous little town,
yes,
to Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
And the preservation of the stunning historic Sauer Castle.
Yes.
S-A-U-E-R.
Yes.
With notes of fabulousness on my nose.
And we have some of the young people who are helping to
chronicling it. And then the redevelopment happens to be one of my dear friends, Angie, and she's going to join us on the program straight ahead as well.
Okay. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III, Dan Weinbaum. My name is Scott Parks. Here on KMBC. All right, welcome back. Good to be with you on this Monday afternoon, summer in fall. Don't forget to check out the Dana Parks podcast. You can find it anywhere you want, anytime you want at kmbz.com.
So it's one of the most stunning, enormous, brick, towering, historic spaces, I think, in our town. If you've never seen the Sour Castle, you've heard us talking about it on the program as various entities fought to preserve it as it was literally crumbling on top of itself. If you think the Maupin Tour home in Lawrence, this is sort of what that looks like on a much grander scale. And they are saving it. And it is my extreme pleasure to welcome in good friend of mine, Angie Gabler, who is the president of Strata Architecture and Preservation. Angie, we're side-dooring this because I was going to talk to our next guest first. And then a friend of mine said, you know, that's Angie's project. So welcome on in. And of course it is. You are in the business of preserving our crumbling architecture.
Angie, hello.
Hi, guys.
Oh, there you are. We can hear you. Yay. How you doing?
Wonderful. How are you doing?
Well, thank you for joining us on such short notice. I was like, is this you? Can you come on the program? Can you tell people why this is important? Like, why what you do to me is so important. Instead of knocking things down and building new things, you help preserve our history.
We do. And I think for a building like this, the Sour Castle is an icon, right? I talk to people that have grown up here in Kansas City. Everybody in Kansas City that grew up here knows what this castle looks like. They all have a story or a memory, or I remember driving by, or, you know, we used to trick or treat there, or we went to a sale or an auction, or, you know, everybody has a story. They're fascinated with the history of the Sour Castle. It was built in 1872 by Anton Sauer, and I think just, it's almost like a little legend here in town, right? And to be able to save this for future generations is just extremely satisfactory, and it's a thrill to watch it.
Angie, how does a building so well-known, once I imagine looked incredible, fall into such disrepair and completely abandoned?
You know, it wasn't really abandoned, and it did fall into disrepair, but I don't think it was necessarily on purpose. I think it's just a matter of, it takes a lot to keep a house like this up.
Yeah.
And over the years, that house has been vandalized. People have stolen things out of it. It's just been really, really sad. And one of these days, I'm going to be posting on Facebook for the community. If you guys have any pieces of Sour Castle, the new owner would love to talk with you. We are in the process of putting back the balconies outside, the lights, and we're looking for parts and pieces of Sour Castle that somebody may have bought from a sale or from a friend or online, anything like that. We would love to talk with you about it. Our goal is to use as many original materials as possible, and to be able to, you know, maybe track down some of these missing features would be really awesome.
And then what happens with the castle once it is finished? I mean, does it belong to the community? Will someone live there?
So it's privately owned. So the new owner bought it in April of 2023, and it will continue to be privately owned and probably used for special events. It's not all worked out yet. The owner is going to be making a public presentation on November 7th at the library. And I think he's going to talk a little bit more about future plans. He's been talking with the neighborhood and with the unified government. But the idea is to get this restored. That's our first step right now, is to just really focus on the stabilization and the restoration of the house. And then we're talking still about the future plans.
And then last question for a second, and then we're going to bring you back in, Angie, if we can. How long is this project going to take? And essentially how much money to save it. And I love that you're looking for old relics from the home. It's not like you can buy a house like this and go shopping at Target and put stuff in. You know, this is so historic. It's important, and it takes money to do this correctly.
Absolutely. A family member recently shared a couple of photographs with the new owner, and I was able to put them in Google Lens and specifically find like the model and manufacturer of the sconces that were in one of the parlors. And I can find them online, but finding them from somebody local would be better, obviously. So anything like that would be helpful. So we've been working on the outside, the shell of the building, the stabilization of that for about a year and a half. And we're now starting to do stabilization on the inside. So I'm guessing by the time we're finished with the castle itself, it will probably be about another year.
Wow.
And the cost? Are you at liberty to share that?
No, not right now, but I can tell you that we're doing it right, and everything is being done to a T.
To a T.
To a T, yes.
Well, you said somebody was going to live in the house. Would it be the owner or would it be someone else?
No, I don't think anybody will live here permanently.
Okay.
It will be commercial use, meaning we're bringing it up to commercial standards. So it will have, you know, fire alarm and emergency lighting and ADA accessibility into the portions that we can get it into.
Okay, so one of the things we want to talk about, and we're going to bring in Diane Houston here, historian, teacher, bulldog, and a couple of her students from Grandview High School.
And responsible for helping save the castle.
Yes,
amazing.
Really responsible for helping save this, because like so many things in town, most people don't pay attention to something like this until it's in the news that this thing is crumbling and we're going to knock it down. And then enter Diane Houston. And Diane, welcome.
Thank you.
How did you like latch onto this and decide not on my watch?
Yeah, I was actually a big part of the Paseo street name change and advocating for that. And I never thought in a million years as a historian that I would have to be politically active. But that's what ended up happening. So once that was over, Sour Castle was always on the forefront of my mind. As Angie said earlier, you know, the architect of Sour Castle, very few of his creations still exist in Kansas City. And he was like the cream of the crop, which is Asa B.B. Cross. So to have that castle sitting up on this hill, just slowly deteriorating and then fast deteriorating because of weather. It's on one of the highest points in Wyandotte County. So we watched from the sidelines as bricks were falling off of the tower. It's a three-story tower. And I just could not stand by anymore. So I went ahead and I write for the Martin City Telegraph on the side and went ahead and wrote an article about it. And the prior owner wasn't so happy with my words. So I was invited to take a tour of the outside of the house. And I just kept it in the news. And I think the biggest thing is you have to use, you know, media as your advocate for sure, because I only have the voice I have. So to bring that out and to make sure that I gave a voice to the process of trying to restore it. That was also talking to the unified government, getting involved to figure out what they could maybe do to save the house. In the end, I mean, it was like a godsend when Mike Heitman was able to purchase this property.
So real quick, because we all remember what Union Station looked like when they opened those locks.
Well,
and
the Liberty
went in,
Memorial was about to fall
and
over.
The ceiling is falling in. There's water. How bad was it when you finally got to look inside?
Bad. Now, I had seen videos. There were several videos that were out there about on, you know, YouTube and such that really showcased how bad it was. But you didn't even need people. The technology is amazing. And we had lots of amateur historians and people who like to fly drones who were flying like right up in it, you know, like, so you're getting like a firsthand, you know, where you couldn't get to, we could get to.
If the raccoons could get in, drones can get in.
Well, correct. And that was what was so crazy about some of these videos and things that came out and pictures. And we used some of them in this the documentaries that we've been producing to show how bad it really was. The tower at one point had a microburst hit it. Now, it was already deteriorating, but there was a microburst that occurred, and you know, instead of fixing it, there was like a piece, like a wooden pallet, just like jerry-rigged on the side of the west side of the tower, just with exposed brick right there. And then we had a really wet summer, and then all of a sudden, just one day, somebody called me and said, Diane, the porch collapsed. Well, we didn't realize at the time the reason the porch collapsed is because the bricks from the tower were literally falling on top of it. So this was it was literally crumbling. You could see inside the staircase. I mean, it was completely visible. So if you can see inside a structure and there's no, you know, wood over it, there's no stabilization happening, I mean, who knows what was inside there? Water damage was extensive. The roof was never put on correctly in the first place. So they kind of just did like a membrane over it. And so, all of this was what Mike ended up taking on when he decided to purchase the house, knowing that in order to do this, you had to go from the bottom up. Like Angie said, is unexciting as it is for people like me. I'm a historian. I'm not an architect like Angie, to understand that, you know, even though we want to see the beautiful elements come back for the castle, there's all this other stuff that costs lots and lots of money.
Right.
That is, it's a process. And it's just been unbelievable to be able to carry on this project, to see that advocacy did work and that Mike was able to purchase this property.
Our text line, if you have a question for Diane or Angie or our next two guests, is 913-586-7798. When we get back, we'll introduce you to two young student journalists who are in the process of documenting the return of Sour Castle. We'll get to that and much more in just a moment here on Dana and Parks.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Sour Castle in Kansas City, Kansas, which sat in disrepair for so long and had become, let's be honest, an eyesore in our community. Once this gorgeous, gigantic home that sits at one of the highest levels in Kansas City, Kansas, and then it had just fallen to pieces. It is being repaired and restored. And two students who join us in studio, Maya and Keegan, seniors at Grandview High School, are documenting the entire restoration process. To you both, we say welcome.
Thank you.
This is part of the story, guys. Part of the story is the documentation of what it's going to take to get this done. And what is it like for you? We'll start with you, Maya. You want to be a journalist. You're getting ready to graduate, and you get this opportunity, really a once-in-a-lifetime peek inside of the restoration of a property like this.
Honestly, I wasn't really expecting this opportunity. It's kind of a scenery change rather than just like being a broadcaster in a high school. Yeah. It's like giving real world experiences that like I can put in my portfolio and actually like learn different things.
When you first saw the house, what did you think?
It was going to fall like any second.
Yeah.
On you?
Yes. The first thing she asked was, is this haunted?
Oh, yeah.
That's the first question you asked.
A lot of people have asked that.
Yes,
and
of course.
Keegan, you are also a senior at Grandview High. You're interested in film. We have a great film community here in Kansas City. What's this been like for you being able to tell this story or preserve this story?
It's definitely been fun. It feels like a once-in-a-lifetime like experience because I've never done anything like this before. Being interested in film, this is kind of like a step like closer to something in that field. It's very fun to like go on location and then like film footage and then go back and edit it and tell a story with it with my teacher's Miss Houston's voiceover looping in my head 24/7.
They're so sick of my voice.
It's going to take about a year. I cannot even imagine how many hundreds of thousands of hours, or if thousands of hours of of film you will end up with, and then the editing process to tell Kansas City the story from point A to point Z, how this all came about.
Yeah, I think it is incredible. I think I was actually blown away just how Keegan and Maya, I kind of handpicked them. And the story went that, you know, the new owner was really adamant in making sure that this project was a piece of the community and to keep that as a piece of the community, meaning like we're not going to hide behind the walls of Sour Castle. And so he had reached out to me because I had been, you know, an advocate for so long on the process of the house being, you know, saved. And he said, how can I get this out for everybody to know? I don't really want to be, up in front of the camera or anything like that. And I said, well, you could do this. And I made like three different suggestions. And the last one was, you know, I have these students at Grandview in my broadcasting class. And, you know, this would be a really great experience. And he's like, well, let me think about it. And then he goes, yeah, let's do that. I was like, really? I never thought in a million years that would happen.
So Keegan, you do the filming and the directing?
It's a joint effort between me and Maya. We both go there like a certain day and like we film all the footage that we need.
And who writes?
Miss Houston does the voiceover.
Yeah, she does all the
mature voice, you know, for this mature conversation.
It's a dangerous word on this program.
I'm sure there are people listening right now. They're like, Diane is mature. Okay.
Let's bring Angie back in now. I'm Angie Gabler, the president of Strata Architecture and Preservation. One of the questions I've asked you this just over drinks, Angie, is like, how is it in America we let these properties get so far gone that sometimes, and we've talked about it on this program in the last couple of years, it's too late and they are knocked down. By the time you are involved and they bring you in, you have seen properties all over the country that this probably would have been easier to try and save 10 years ago, but we're just so happy that you are involved in the restoration now.
Yeah, this one definitely, like Diane said, I think had Mike not bought this when he did, I think we would have seen the full tower collapse. And then you know what happens after that, right? It was taking on a lot of water. Water is like the number one enemy to any historic building. And so right now we've been focusing, you know, on the shell of the building and getting that stabilized so we can work inside. So new roof, all new gutters, new cornice pieces all around the top. The top of the tower has its crown back. I know Diane put that in her video. I want to give her a plug real quick because there's three YouTube videos that everybody in public can watch that her crews put together, and she's narrated. And it really does show the process to date. Right now we're working on foundation waterproofing, again, trying to keep water out of the building. And then we'll be working on the interior a little bit more. But you're right. These buildings, water is the number one enemy. So when water gets in, it damages everything. It can damage our structure. It can damage the materials. And then it makes life safety issues inside where it's dangerous to walk around. I would say there were several rooms in this house where if you started walking to certain parts of the room, you know, you could fall through the floor. And it was definitely not habitable, nowhere close to it. Mike saved it just in time, in my opinion. I think another 6 months, we probably would have lost the tower. And then who knows what happens after that. It's definitely been a labor of love for Mike and his family and our whole team that's been out there. So,
I don't know if this is for you, Diane, or you, Angie, but how many hoops or red tape do you have to cut through when dealing with a home or a property like this that is on a historical registry?
Angie.
Yeah, so this is locally listed and on the National Register, both. And the local listing is the one that gives it the teeth. So the unified government is the one that can say what can happen to the building. So when you want to make a change, you turn an application in, you turn drawings in, you tell them exactly what you're going to do. Most of what we've been doing is what we would consider maintenance, meaning we're putting things, we're repairing what we can and replacing what we have in kind, meaning if there's brick, we're going to put brick back. If we have a wood window, we're putting wood windows back. The roofing on this building was always metal and then had like four or five other roofs laid over it at different times, wood, different types of shingles, rolled roofing. It was really bad. And we went back with slate on this one to make it more durable long term. But all of that gets decided at the state, at the local level, with the unified government, and then also the State Historic Preservation Office weighs in. And so definitely the local listing is what gives it the teeth and the oversight. So they've been a wonderful partner for Mike. The unified government has, and they've been very, very supportive of the project. We'll be submitting phase two to them in the coming week to get started on the interior.
Tell me more on the November 7th public presentation on Sauer Castle, Angie. I hate to put you on the spot, but that is coming up. If people want a little bit of a peek inside on what's going on and also how they can help scour the town for any of the, you know, ornamental items that once stood inside the home, where do they go to see more about that?
So definitely get on the Sauer Facebook page because all of that information is on there. Mike's been really, really good. And Jason Simmons, local advocate, also owns that webpage. And he's been very good about posting. So all the information for the November 7th talk is on the Facebook page. And then we'll be posting soon some photographs of some of the things we're missing and looking for. Uh-huh. And any stories. We'd love photographs, you know, memories from anybody. But definitely looking for some of the furnishings and the fixtures and things that are missing from the house.
It's like a hide and seek or like a scavenger hunt locally, Angie, really to find some of the fixtures, is it not?
Oh, and we're certain they're here, right? People, this house has been parted out over the years, whether it was sold at sales for people that owned the house at the time or things that were just stolen out of the house over a period of years. You know, we have parts and pieces of balconies, but not enough to reconstruct them. So we're missing some of the newel posts, for instance. Like I said, a lot of the lighting inside, we are missing pieces of some of the mantles. But I know somebody has them, right? Nobody would throw those away. You wouldn't take them from the castle to not keep them or cherish them. But Mike's willing to talk to people and hopefully put a plan together that we can get some of those items back.
And no questions asked.
Right. Nope, not at all. Zero. Absolutely.
I got this mantle, Angie. I don't know where it came from.
So it
just appeared.
It kind of looks like the one in the front of the room. Great.
Angie, thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Real quick, back to the seniors from Grandview High School. What have you learned that we don't know about Sauer Castle?
it's dangerous in there. I mean,
do not go in there.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet.
Is it going to be beautiful when it's done?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been really cool to I've been, you know,
talking about this place for years and fighting to try to make sure this exact thing happened. And then it's really surreal to get a front row seat to this. So I'm really feel blessed that this was, I never thought I'd ever have that opportunity.
And I would also like to put in a plug just even for Angie and the folks over at Strata who around the country are saving these homes and buildings and places of import to the United States. For all communities to get involved, and don't let it get to the point,
right?
Despite the red tape, don't let it get to the point where the tower is crumbling. Because once that happens, these are lost forever, and you know someone puts a Walmart in there. And so, you know, there are things around us worth saving. Pay attention to those things.
I agree. I think this is really an abnormal story because it was in the state that it shouldn't have survived. Honestly, that it was past saving it to what most people would think was past saving.
And just in closing, and I know that they're documenting all of this and telling the story, but you know there's such a story to tell. And quite frankly, I had never heard of Sour Castle and KCK until it was in complete and total disrepair. I didn't even know it existed. I mean, there's a great story to be told here, and I'm thrilled that you're letting two young people tell that story for us.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Right, guys?
Yeah.
We have a YouTube channel. The first episode that we did was just on the history of the property. So if anybody doesn't know the background and about the man who built the home and then obviously the architect and such, and then how we got to the point where it almost fell down. And then we launched into our second episode that was really about the early restoration and that's when the kids were on site and that was scary. And then the last episode was just came out. It's through Saving Sour Castle. You can look it up on YouTube and easily find it. And that's really documented the progress all the way up to this fall.
Go to YouTube. Saving Sour Castle. Our huge thanks to Angie Gabler, president of Strata Architecture and Preservation. Diane Houston and your students, Maya, Keegan, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And we cannot wait to see that finished project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming by. Quick break. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott. You're on KMBZ. My heart broke for her when I saw this over the weekend, but apparently there's a singer named Loomis.
Okay, wait, can I just, real quick?
Yes, my favorite student in the front row, Dana Wright.
Why would someone agree to sing the national anthem if they can't sing the national anthem?
Loomis has issued a groveling apology after delivering a botched performance of the national anthem during a live C-SPAN broadcast last week. It was basically the third-party presidential candidates. So think Green Party, Libertarian Party, the Rent's Too Damn High Party.
Who?
The Rent's Too Damn High. So anyway, she starts singing Sam's trying to get it right now. And she starts singing the national anthem, and it is not good. And you know when you get nervous, your throat tends to tighten up?
Yep.
And she gets, like, partly through the national anthem.
Oh, it's bad.
Just let her rip,
do you have
Sam.
It? Just let
I
her
don't rip. Have the full thing. This is the implosion.
Okay.
Can I go back, please?
All right, then the director off mic goes, we're live.
Bursting, and I got too nervous.
We're live.
That is an implosion.
It's a classic case of I started too high, I don't have the range. Should have started lower, and even then, you have to know you have. You either have the range to sing that song, Scott, or you
or
do
you
not.
Don't. That's right.
One more time.
And the rocket, can I go back, please?
Pretty sure you're not supposed to drop the F-bomb during the singing of the national anthem.
By the way, when she gets back into it, it's still bad.
The singer, who happens to be the daughter of a veteran, Saturday addressed all the craziness that has taken place since her botched rendition went viral. Quoting here, first off, I would like to apologize to the Free and Equal political team for this mishap. And from the bottom of my heart, I want to apologize. And I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to mess up the national anthem. And I wanted to thank you guys for giving me a chance and believing in me.
Okay, she did go on to say that performing the national anthem has been something she long had concerns about singing. And she said, I was always scared that I was going to fail. And then I did. And the world has seen that. So I want anybody out there who's seen that you can change anything negative into something positive.
Good for her. Okay.
Can I go back, please? We're live.
We're live. We're going to do it live.
We're doing it live.
Good Morning America has reached out and they've offered her a chance to come on the air and redeem herself.
No.
Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it.
That is, we've talked about this. I don't know how many octaves or whatever you have to be able to, you have to be like, not Mariah Carey, but in the wheelhouse to be able to pull that off well.
You got to be good.
And start lower. Start
and
lower.
As we've already mentioned, you can't just start dropping the F-bomb. Pause. Gather yourself. Continue singing.
She did say,
we're
I am
live.
We're live. Can I do it over? Can I please do it over? We're live. She did say, I'm a really good singer.
I'm not denying that.
I'm sure she is.
Just not with
not
that
right
song
then.
At that moment.
It was on C-SPAN 2. Nobody saw it.
You're right. That's the
it's the third party presidential debate.
Saving grace there.
Quick break for the news. Dan Wymom has that coming up in 2 minutes. Sam Stevie the Third, Dana Wright. My name's Scott. Don't forget to check out the Dana Parks podcast. It is available online at kmbz.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.